Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
From VOA Learning English, this is As It Is. I'm Mario Ritter.
And I'm Anna Mateo. Today's show is all about preservation, preserving endangered lands and endangered animals. In the second half of today's show, we will hear about protecting areas called wetlands.
Wetlands are important to people around the world. They are needed to process drinking water. They are also a resource for fishermen and farmers. A meeting in Punta del Este, Uruguay, was aimed at finding ways to save wetlands around the world.
But first, we hear about protecting animals. The U.S. government will give as much as $500,000 for a new science and technology solution that helps stop poaching and trade in protected animals.
Kelly Jean Kelly brings us this story, reported by VOA Asia correspondent Steve Herman in Bangkok, Thailand.
The agency will pay the winner up to $500,000. People or groups can write a short description of their ideas and submit them to wildlifecrimetech.org by the end of this month. Michael Yates is the USAID mission director in Asia. He says individuals and organizations that fight the traffickers want help discovering where the criminals travel. They also want to learn ways to strengthen evidence against traffickers. And they want to learn how to reduce the demand for wildlife, as well as how to stop corruption.
They're all interlinked, and it's going to take concerted action in each one of these areas to really address this issue, and it's something that needs to be addressed with urgency. The trend lines are just enormously troublesome with respect to the increase in poaching.
Mr. Yates says every member of society must help if a solution is to be found. Governments cannot solve the issue on their own, he says. Instead, USAID is seeking ideas from the public. USAID is working with the National Geographic Society, the Smithsonian Institution, and the Wildlife Trafficking Network, TRAFFIC, on the project. The agency says an idea will be judged on its possible effect on trafficking and whether it can be used in large-scale actions against criminals. The strongest ideas will then be placed into the competition. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
I'm Mario Ritter.
And I'm Anna Mateo. After a short break, we'll be back to talk about protecting wetlands. Welcome back to As It Is. We just heard a story on money being invested in technology to protect wildlife and endangered animals from poachers. Next, Mario brings us a story about saving another part of our environment, wetlands.
Wetlands are important to our environment. They help clean drinking water and preserve water for agriculture. Fish and wildlife also need wetlands.
A recent meeting in Punta del Este, Uruguay, discussed ways to save wetlands around the world. Mario, there are some special words that our listeners may need to know to fully understand this story.
That's right. A word that might be new to our listeners is aquaculture. Aquaculture is the cultivation of water plants or animals for human use or consumption. The word buffer is also used in this story. A buffer is something, anything really, that serves as a protective barrier.
Also, the word fodder means food for animals, and to decay means to be slowly destroyed or broken down by natural processes. Okay, now with those words defined, here is Mario with protecting wetlands.
Hundreds of millions of people around the world depend on wetlands for their livelihoods, such as fishing and farming. However, since 1900, experts say 64% of wetlands have disappeared. The rest are on the decline. Dr. Christopher Briggs is the Secretary General of the Ramsar Convention. He says wetlands affect almost every part of people's lives. Mr. Briggs adds that wetlands also clean and purify water and help to store carbon. He says that 660 million people around the world depend on wetlands because they earn a living from the aquaculture and the fishery industries. Wetlands are a buffer to protect people from natural disasters. He adds that the wetlands can buffer the impacts of both drought and flooding. Besides providing resources for fishing, farming, water, and fodder, wetlands are a place for recreation for millions of people. Mr. Briggs also says that wetlands are important for our future and for future generations. About 40% of the remaining wetlands have faced destruction over the last 40 years. The decline continues at a rate of 1.5% each year. Christopher Briggs says that is because people build their civilizations near wetlands. Now the world is facing a massive loss of wetlands. The World Wildlife Fund reports that 76% of the plant and animal species living in wetlands have been disappearing over the last 40 years. Mr. Briggs compares the damage of wetlands to the loss of rainforest in Brazil and countries in Asia during the 1980s. He adds that wetlands might face more serious destruction as the world's population increases. That number is expected to grow to more than 9 billion by 2050. Mr. Briggs says that people have only recently recognized the issue of the loss of wetlands. He says that there is a need to raise people's awareness on the issue of wetland protection. People, Mr. Briggs adds, need to know that wetlands are as important as rainforests because they have similar functions. Peatlands, for example, are areas of partially decayed vegetation and other organic matter. They cover 3% of the land's surface, but they capture twice as much carbon as all the world's forests. I'm Mario Ritter.
And I'm Anna Mateo. That's all for As It Is. Stay with us. There is more Learning English programming coming up. Words and Their Stories is next, followed by People in America.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
Now, Words and Their Stories, a VOA Learning English program about American expressions. I'm Anna Mateo with expressions using the word sun. The first expression is about everything. Everything under the sun. If you own a store that sold many different items, your advertisements could say, "You sell everything under the sun." This would not be exactly true, of course, but what would advertising be without some creative descriptions? Here is another example. Let's say you are talking with a friend you have not seen for a long time. The two of you could have a lot of catching up to do, so you talk about everything under the sun. Under the sun is an old expression, at least 3,000 years old. It means everywhere the sun shines. King Solomon of Israel used it in the Bible. He wrote that nothing under the sun is new. What has been will be again, he said, and what has been done will be done again. If there is nothing new under the sun, there is nothing new anywhere. New or old, few things can be hidden in the bright light of the sun. That leads to another expression, a sunshine law. This law says that all government meetings must be open to the public. In some states, sunshine laws also say the government must permit the public to see government records. The Atlanta Journal, a Constitution newspaper, published a report about the value of sunshine laws. It told about how officials of a local government met secretly with a land developer to discuss using public land for a private entertainment center. The deal was stopped when it finally became publicly known. It often takes a crisis, the newspaper report said, to awaken citizens to their rights under the state sunshine laws. It said the laws are called that because they shine sunlight on dark corners where secret deals can be made. Another expression about the sun is sunbelt. The word describes the warmer states of the American South, from Florida to California. The warmer weather in the Sun Belt causes many people to move there. They move from the Frost Belt, the colder northern states, and the Rust Belt, the older industrial states. In addition, labor costs are lower in the Sun Belt, and labor unions are not as strong as in the North. So many companies moved their factories to the Sun Belt. Workers followed. By 1990, the Sun Belt cities of Los Angeles, San Diego, Phoenix, Houston, Dallas, and San Antonio were among the 10 largest cities in the United States. From geographic areas to music, the word sun finds its place. Every type of music, from rock to pop to country, has songs about the sun. One of the most popular is "You Are My Sunshine." What began as a sad love song is now a classic children's song. Many performers have recorded this song. Here is part of it.
You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me happy when skies are gray. You'll never know, dear, how much I love you. Please don't take my sunshine away.
The rock group Beatles have several songs with sun in the title. A couple are "Here Comes the Sun" and "Good Day Sunshine." Elton John sang "Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me," and the musical group Fifth Dimension wanted to let the sunshine in on a United States that was heavily involved in the Vietnam War. This song was originally in the musical theater performance and movie Hair, which criticized the Vietnam War. Aquarius' "Let the Sunshine In" became a popular song in the anti-war culture in the 1960s U.S. I'm Ana Mateo. Peace.
I'm Steve Ember.
And I'm Barbara Klein with People in America in VOA Special English. Today, we tell about Beverly Sills. Her clear soprano voice and lively spirit made her one of the most famous performers in the world of opera. Sills worked hard to make opera an art form that the general public could enjoy. She spent the later part of her career as a strong cultural leader for three major performing arts centers in New York City.
That was Beverly Sills performing a song from the opera The Tales of Hoffmann by the French composer Jacques Offenbach. Sills is singing the role of Olympia, a female robot who keeps breaking down while singing a series of high notes. This difficult aria gives a good example of the sweet and expressive voice that made Beverly Sills famous.
Beverly Sills was born Belle Silverman in 1929. Her family lived in the Crown Heights area of Brooklyn, New York. Her father, Morris, came from Romania, and her mother, Shirley, was Russian. Sills said that her father believed that a person could live the real American dream only with an educated mind. Part of her early education came in the form of listening. Beverly's mother played old opera records. The young child learned to sing by repeating the words of the songs. Shirley Silverman pushed Beverly at a young age to become a performer. By the age of 4, Beverly was singing on a weekly children's radio program and also making radio advertisements.
Rinse all white, happy little wash day song.
Beverly also had roles in several short movies. By the age of 9, she had a voice teacher, Estelle Liebling, who taught her the art of coloratura. Coloratura is a method of singing in which notes are added to make a part of a song more complex. Most coloratura sopranos can sing very high notes.
Beverly graduated from professional school in 1945. She then started singing with traveling opera companies, performing the works of such composers as Gilbert and Sullivan. During these 10 years, she also made guest appearances at opera companies throughout America. She tried 7 times to audition and be accepted into the New York City Opera. Finally, in 1955, she succeeded. Also that year, Beverly Sills met Peter Greenow while she was performing in Cleveland, Ohio. She married him the next year and moved to Cleveland.
Sills continued singing for the New York City Opera and traveled back and forth to Cleveland. In 1959, she had a daughter named Meredith. 2 years later, she had a son, Peter. Beverly Sills and her husband soon learned that their daughter was deaf. They also found out that their son had major developmental problems. He was mentally handicapped and autistic. In 1961, Sills stopped singing to take care of her children during this difficult time. Her daughters slowly learned to go to school and lead a normal life. But her son later had to live in a care center with medical professionals.
In time, Beverly Sills returned to work. Here she talks about how her family's situation changed her professionally. The recording is part of a 2006 documentary movie about her life.
My whole attitude about life is different, and naturally it affected my singing. It affected my whole attitude about my career. How can I be affected by a trivial thing that someone will say to me backstage that perhaps that they didn't like my singing? How can I be affected by that? That's something that's a million miles from me. I felt, as far as my singing was concerned, that the only person I really had to please was me.
Beverly Sills' big break into fame took place in 1966 when she performed Cleopatra in Handel's Julius Caesar. Her performances received some of the greatest critical praise of her career. Here is a song from that opera.
Years later, Sills received more praise for her role in the French opera Manon. One critic wrote that if he had made a list of the wonders of New York City to give a traveler, he would put Beverly Sills as Manon at the top of the list. She would even be ahead of the Statue of Liberty and the Empire State Building. Here is Beverly Sills singing the part of Manon.
Over the next 20 years, Beverly Sills became known as the Queen of American Opera. In addition to singing, she often appeared on popular television shows. Audiences liked her because of her laughter and funny jokes. Most American opera singers at the time went to Europe for training and jobs, but Sills learned her art in America, and that's where she performed. She limited her visits to foreign countries so she could always be near her children.
When she did perform internationally, critics highly praised her performances. In 1973, she performed Donizetti's Lucia de Lammermoor at Covent Garden in London. Here is the famous mad scene where Lucia becomes wild with sadness over a lost love. It is one of the more difficult songs in opera to sing, but Sills performs the aria beautifully. Beverly Sills retired from singing in 1980, but she did not leave the opera world. She became director of the New York City Opera. For 8 years, she worked hard to modernize the city opera. She also raised millions of dollars to keep it operating. She later held other important positions, including chairwoman of the Board of Supervisors for New York City's Lincoln Center for the Performing Arts. In 2002, she became chairwoman of New York's Metropolitan Opera House before retiring for good 3 years later. Beverly Sills died in 2007 of lung cancer. She was 78. She once said that she had never been a happy woman, but she said she had always been able to feel cheerful because her work kept her going. We leave you with Beverly Sills singing the role of Violetta in Giuseppe Verdi's opera La Traviata. In this magical performance, you can hear the joyous celebration she found in music. This program was written and produced by Dana Demange. I'm Barbara Klein.
And I'm Steve Ember. You can learn more about famous Americans and download scripts and audio of our programs at voaspecialenglish.com. Join us again next week for People in America in VOA Special English.